Hey, this is Stelly Efty.
And this is Heaton Sean, the Startup Chat.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about hypnosis.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best. Yeah. And I know nothing about it except the voodoo I see on TV. Maybe there's like a Knight Rider episode about hypnosis that I recall. So that's the last thing I recall about hypnosis. I also, related, I do know some people who consider themselves healers. So I think that's kind of somewhat related in some ways. But I'm supposed to talk to you about it because I want to learn all about it.
All right.
So tell us about hypnosis, Stelly.
So here's why we're talking about this in this episode. A bunch of people have asked about this because in prior episode, I've mentioned it at random times contextually that I have studied hypnosis in the past and that you know, I know a thing or two about it. And people just were curious about this. And you know, Heaton was like, we should talk about this one day because I want to know more about it. So this is what we're doing.
So this is Hypnosis 101 from Stelly.
From
straight up.
Stelly
I'm just going to bug him the whole
there
time.
There you go. So let me give maybe a two-minute version of how I got involved with it and my quick summary of it. And then I'll let you drive the conversation and whatever your curiosities are. Heaton has the most evil look ever on his – he's just so happy to talk about this. I don't know, mischievous look on his face. The other thing is Heaton has an awesome shirt on today. He's a very sexy, very handsome man, I have to say. Now, he only has to make me one promise after today's episode. All the other t-shirts – so he lost all this weight. He looks great. All the other shirts that don't fit anymore, you have to throw them away.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
Throw them away. Okay, so – hypnosis. So I never had an attraction to hypnosis. I always thought of it as I think most people do, like the stage hypnosis, the you are a chicken now, bop, 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 and yeah. You know, I never thought about it too much, never knew is this true or not or what is it, but I was not fascinated by this topic at all.
So how'd you get into it?
I got into it because I got fascinated for a while on the topic of neuro-linguistic programming, which is kind of a psychology, language changing people and their minds type of a deal.
Yep, I have two friends actually that have gone through formal education on that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I officially went through even having the, you know, you do the practitioner, the master, and the trainer. And
oh, you did.
I did the whole thing.
You did the NLP thing.
Yeah, and I did that with the inventor of it, so Richard Bandler, so the guy that started the whole thing back in London. So I had met a guy in Berlin. This is actually how I met Ramin.
Okay.
Who's working with me at Close Up, but also is kind of...
he helps a lot with the Startup Chat.
Yeah. So shout out to Ramin.
He's making
a lot of this happen. That's how we met. So I met this trainer in Berlin that was really a fascinating character, and he was able to do things with language that I quite couldn't understand, but I was fascinated by. And I bought like a whole package, which was like 9 months worth of like workshops and things he was doing. I was like, I'm just going to buy everything because I want to learn everything this guy knows.
Yeah.
And one of those workshops was a hypnosis workshop. And I was like, yeah, this was the only thing I was not interested in. Funny enough, I was like, whatever. I bought the whole package. You know, I might as well go to this thing.
I'm sure the other content was great.
Yeah.
Your expectation on quality was high, but
I was not that.
You know what I know about you? Like, if something bothers you, you should do it.
Yeah.
In hindsight, you're like, it bothered me. I'm like, oh, Stelly's going to do it.
Yeah. So, of all the workshops, this was the one where I was like, nah, do I really need to do this? But whatever. I booked it, so I went. And it definitely was one of the most powerful things I did in the whole thing, and one of the most valuable things. So here is my quick summary on what hypnosis is and what it isn't, because a lot of people have asked me this in the past, and then we'll dig deeper.
Yeah.
So hypnosis is really just a very instructional form, a very deterministic form to get you to change your kind of mental state of mind, right? So there is full awakeness and alertness, and then there is you're sleeping and you're completely unconscious. there's a big range between these two states that we all experience during the day. We're all in, most of our days, we're not fully alert, right? We're somewhere between alert and being asleep, right? And
I'm sleeping right now.
Yeah, there you go. Driving a car is a beautiful.
See, you're boring me.
Driving a car, I'm just going to ignore this guy, is a state where you're not fully alert most of the times. You're in some kind of a, you know, some kind of a trance. Because
like that feeling you get when you drive somewhere and you get there and you're like, how'd I get there?
How did I
get
there?
Yeah, I get that a lot. Yeah.
Watching a movie, you have to, by definition, be in a trance to enjoy it. Because if you were fully alert of the environment, the television set, yourself, the feeling of the couch on your butt, while watching this, you would never emotionally get completely sucked into the movie. What happens when we watch a movie is that we get into a trance where everything blurs out and we actually live with the character, the story, the highs, the lows. That's why we're sweating when it's like action or we get all tense, or when it's a romantic moment and somebody says something stupid, we get embarrassed. It's because we're in a trance. We forget about everything and we live the story with the protagonist. So there's many, many different versions of not alertness, somewhere being in a different state that we're just not, we don't study that typically. So we're not even aware that we are going through these all these different phases of consciousness or levels of consciousness during the day. What hypnosis is nothing else than learning to be aware of these different levels of awareness and consciousness and being able to do things with it, right? So you use language and you use a lot of other techniques to get somebody in a very relaxed, very deep kind of state where you're not asleep, but you're not fully alert and awake. And in these states, the mind is capable of accomplishing certain things at a much higher, you know, efficiency or productivity than in other states. It has some practical applications.
Okay.
So when it comes to now, my last thing, and then we'll go deep, is what is stage hypnosis now? Can you make somebody do weird, funny, shitty stuff
against
their will? Yeah. Let's get that out of there, because that's how everybody thinks about hypnosis.
Yeah, that's right.
I get you to close your eyes and then I have full control over your body, soul, and mind, right? That is not fully accurate, although it's not a lie either. So what happens in stage hypnosis is something super fascinating, which is that, when you're in a deep state, you're never gone. It's never like you are totally gone. There's always something in you that's still there because you're not fully like asleep or something.
You're still aware to some level.
You're still very aware to some level, and you have control over what you allow and what you don't allow to happen. Now, and there's one of the biggest hypnotists that ever lived, and the guy that brought hypnosis from the circus to the clinical space, for instance, was Milton H. Erickson, who was paralyzed, and he actually ran a really large experiment where he tried to make people do things that he thought would be against their moral context in deep sessions. Yeah. And he would basically do these test studies where he'd say, this person would never steal, and I think this person would steal. And then he would, in their psychological sessions, just drop a suggestion that when you walk out of the session today, there's going to be lots of space for you to do things and you might see something you want and maybe why not go for it, right? Like, this is very suggestive. This is how you would speak to somebody in a deep trance. And then they would walk out and there would be this beautiful golden whatever pen. And without failing, everybody that he made that suggestion to would stop. They would have video recorders and contemplate stealing it. Everybody would pick it up and look at it. Everybody would flirt with the idea. But only the people that he had actually said that he thinks in their moral compass that would do it, only those people would steal it. The people that he thought wouldn't do it, they thought about it, but they ended up not doing it. So you can influence people, but not to do things that are completely against their will or moral context. So in stage hypnosis, what happens is, a lot of times what happens before the hypnotist comes on stage is that there's somebody else that comes before that main act. And that person sometimes is just, quote unquote, a comedian, for instance, or a storyteller, whatever. And that person will come out and that person will tell funny stories and warm the audience up and do all these things that are set up. They seem to be completely unrelated to the hypnosis show, but what he's doing is he's basically reading the crowd. And he will tell these stories that seem totally unrelated, but they're actually giving the crowd they're actually eliciting reactions from the people in the crowd that want to be on stage. So he might tell a metaphor or story about, you know, people that are always kind of never getting out of themselves, and then they did, and he'll read body language, which is another fascinating topic. You can read micro reactions on body language and go, okay, row A, seat Z is a person that wants to get on stage, wants to be hypnotized, wants to do something crazy, right? They might not know it, but they came today because they want they're primed for this. So then when the hypnotist comes out and picks up some random people, these people are not random.
So that person's informed him.
Yes, or her about Here are the people that came today. They might not know it, but they secretly wish to be on stage and do something that's crazy or adventurous. So the hypnotist will pick these people, right? And then they will do these crazy things like being a chicken or something, because subconsciously they want to do something crazy. They want to experience that. If you're like, I absolutely don't want that, it's not that it's impossible, but it's very improbable that the hypnotist will be able to do that. The people that are great at hypnosis, they will only get you to do things that you don't want consciously to do by charming you into it, in the sense of like, making it feel so good that you go, oh, okay, fuck it, I'll do it.
Yep.
But not if you really don't want to do it. You can't make people to completely act like zombies or anything like that. So there's a lot of setup for the stage stuff that's going on.
Cool. Good to know.
All right.
That's huge.
That's the episode. Right, we're done.
Okay. So I didn't realize that the hypnosis stuff that you kind of got exposed to came from NLP.
Yeah.
Right. And that stuff, because I think NLP is super interesting. So I guess what I want to know, because you've mentioned it many times, is like, how has that either helped you or changed you?
Yes. So in a number of ways. I mean, many, many, many small things. Number one, I think it exposed me more directly to my subconscious mind, or the kind of states I can get into. And you can get to that through meditation. Meditation can get people to very deep states that are not, you're not asleep, but you're not fully alert and awake. You're somewhere else. Hypnosis is more directive. Like hypnosis, I'll get you to that state in 5 minutes, and then I'll do things with you. We'll work on something. We'll get rid of a fear. We'll work on something. It's very directive, versus meditation is absolutely non-directive. The whole point is not to try to do anything.
Yep.
But the end result oftentimes can be very similar. You can get into very deep states. So experiencing the variety of states that you can be in created to me, for me at least, a wider awareness on what my state is in everyday life. Just even knowing right now, like sometimes, like the other day, 2 days ago, I was in the state where I could not productively do the thing that I wanted to do, and I was just fucking around. And the more I was fucking around, the more tense my body got. And eventually I was in this like destructive zone of just like tensing up more and more and doing more and more like random bullshit. And I realized the state of mind I'm in, and I was like, okay, there's no way for me to turn this around right here and right now. So I walked out, I went on a 10-minute walk, I sat down, I meditated for 5 minutes, I came back, and I got this thing done. And it's not that you need to learn hypnosis to be able to do that, but it helped me at any given time be more aware and more in touch with how alert and awake and how much in some kind of a trance am I, and is this trance benefiting me right now? Is this helping me or is this not helping me? The other thing is I learned a lot about language. Like the beauty of hypnosis is that it is kind of, you utilize
based on language.
It's based on language. And you learn, like I learned about, you know, linguistics to a very specific degree, and like the surface structure and the deep structure of language, and how like every sentence to a certain degree, or the way communication works to a massive degree, is that there's very little content in every sentence we speak, and there's an insane amount of adding information and adding context and doing a shit ton of work from the brain to make sense of it all, right? So even if I say I bought a house, that sentence makes perfect sense, seems to be logical, but there's a shit ton of information missing.
What kind of house? How much did it cost?
What currency? What currency?
What
from whom?
The owner? What street is it on? What's the address?
All that shit, your brain add it. Yeah. You thought dollars. You thought the owner.
Yeah.
You added information to make sense of that sentence. But I didn't give you that information.
No, you didn't.
So hypnosis actually realizes that the brain does that and takes advantage of it.
Oh.
Right? So hypnosis, a lot of times, the language you use is can be very ambiguous by design. You'll be very ambiguous to make the brain at certain things because you don't know these
for
things.
For itself.
For itself, yeah. Right? So that's why the example that I brought before, Milton H. Erickson would not tell people, and when you walk out, you will steal the pen. That's not the way he would say, and when you walk out, there's going to be space and time, and why not do something for you? Why not take a chance, and treat yourself, because nobody's going to worry or care anyway. And that's all,
it's
like...
just open up the mind to the possibility.
To the possibility. But I do influence it. So I'll say, take the chance. I might even in if you have like master hypnotists, they might highlight certain words and the brain picks up on that and will make, like, it could be that the sentence, I highlight the word take, I highlight the word, you know, pencil three sentences later, and I might take the highlight the word door. And your brain notices these little things on the subconscious level, but consciously you didn't pay any attention to any of that. So there's a lot that can be done with language. And I think that when people are like, well, isn't this manipulative? Isn't that making you do, but make people do certain things? I think that people at the beginning of their excitement when they learn these techniques, I think they're very manipulative. Just like I think that when people learn about different psychological types and they take like a test, they walk around being fucking assholes and going, you are a blue type, you are a green type, you're this and this type. Shut the fuck up. You've met me for 5 minutes. You don't know anything, right? You need to, it doesn't mean that knowledge is useless, but it's used, you know, in a fashion that's not really.
Yeah, so the manipulation is more either abuse or just somebody who's naive about it.
I think it's
something like that.
I think it usually is abuse, and it usually is like overly eagerness of like being too in love with, oh, I can do these, all these crazy things. Yeah. But the matter of fact is that every day we are communicating with each other and influencing each other in very subconscious ways. And hypnosis to me has helped me influence, be more aware of the way I influence people with language, and therefore take more control over doing it positively. And I'll give you one simple example of this is that, and I never knew this before hypnosis, there's an associated way of communication and there's a disassociated way of communication. So I can talk in the I form, you know, when I did this and this, I really loved it and I, you know, was excited about it. Or I can say, you know, when you do this and you really get excited, you really love this feeling, right? One is a disassociated, I talk about you, the other talk about I, although in both examples, I might be talking about myself.
And that's association from you.
Yes.
But then both of those are the opposite for the other person.
Yes.
Right? Like if you say you're associating to me. You say, I am associating to you.
Exactly.
In fact, even when you started going, I'm not used to you doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, wait, like it already tweaked my brain. I'm like, wait, he never does that.
Yeah, yeah.
You're always the you, not the I. So, I mean, just typically
so,
in your case.
Yeah, so here's the deal with this. The reason why we choose associated or disassociated communication has often to do with, is this a pleasurable thing or not? When it's something that we don't like, we much more default to disassociated communication because then we're not in the feeling of the situation. We kind of disassociate because we, you know, when you had a really bad day, right? So that's kind of very common.
No, thing. I don't know. Stella.
Yes, exactly.
I'm so having a great day.
Exactly. So the problem with this way of talking is that I want to disassociate from the shitty feeling, but I'm now making your brain associated.
Pushing it on me.
Yes. And you don't know. We've all had conversations with people that you hang up and you feel horrible.
Yeah.
And it was all about their problems. Why do you feel horrible?
Right. Yeah.
Because they communicated in a way that made you associate with all their problems really, really heavily. And they didn't know that. All they wanted is communicate in a way that disassociates.
Actually, you know what's funny? Like, I've never studied this stuff. I know a few people that have, including yourself. And what's interesting is when people start using, you know this, you that, I'm like, wait. Is that what you're dealing with right now?
Because
you're saying it like everyone's got this problem.
Yes.
You know, and I'm like, what if, no, you have this problem.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting, right? It's almost like it is deflection.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, you can use that. So in clinical hypnosis and like hypnotherapist, like when they sit down, for instance, with people that have gone through trauma, like really horrible situations, when they try to work with them on that, they will create therapeutic sessions where there's like a second, third, or fourth degree of disassociation. So they'll do a session where they'll tell the person to imagine themselves sitting somewhere watching on television how the thing happened, right? Because it's so traumatic, you can't relive it.
And then it's like, describe it to me.
Yes.
Right? And then they can share everything probably without feeling associated to it.
Without reliving the emotions as intensely.
Makes sense.
Right? So when you know these things, you pick up on how people influence you negatively or positively, independently if they want it or not, right? And you take more charge of that, but also pay attention on how you influence people negatively or positively.
So it's really like what you put out words-wise, even body language, and then what you're taking in. The it sounds like, just to summarize this for myself, the hypnosis and NLP stuff you studied has helped you essentially understand communication better, understand how people's words impact you and how your words impact them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Awesome.
And we're about
I want your tips though. Like the tips. Like I don't have any.
Yeah.
Except that like I think this stuff's super important and I nitpick people's words, especially when I'm giving them advice.
Yeah.
And again, always been attracted to this, and I totally believe that there's a lot of science, you know, on how they figured all this stuff out, right? Especially with the psychology. But like it's starting to add up to me also why I don't do sales like you do, but I could tell a salesperson how to do their job better than they know how to do, especially when it comes to what do you tell a customer?
Yeah.
Right? It's like a specialty I have. I don't know why I have it, but I think it has a lot to do with the words. Mm-hmm. So then that's making me think that like a lot of the advice you probably give around sales has something to do with this type of stuff too.
I mean, it's a big blend. Yeah. So there's things that I've learned and been influenced by through hypnosis or NLP many, many